VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Saturday morning, 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And I'm going to issue my third consecutive pre-apology in case I break into a coughing jag. Because all of you who have had this, at least everybody I've talked to, says it doesn't go away for a while. But we're feeling good. Feeling especially good after the market this week.
Yeah. It's been. You've had this thing as long as the market's been going up.
Well, maybe I don't.
Yeah,
want to get better.
Don't get rid of it.
Whatever works, works for me. Anyway, I'd like to welcome everybody back, all the regulars. Thanks for always being there. It's for you that we do this. And then there's the new people that we know are coming on board every week because we hear from them. And it's nice to know that people are out there listening. If you have been told about it and you're becoming a regular, then hope to stick around for a while. And if you're just driving by, do the same thing. Stick around for a while. We'll talk about some interesting things. In fact, we've got a lot of interesting things to talk about. And we will do exactly that. And we'll talk about all the things that we really like, unless you would like to bring up a subject on your own. Yeah, the reason that so few people do live radio shows is something of a mystery to me. I think every radio show that's live is enhanced by callers. The discussions that you enter into, unknowing, every time the phone rings, you don't know what's going to be asked. I think those are often the most fun because you haven't had time to pre-plan your opinion, and you can hammer out some good ideas and listen to other people. Whereas if you're just one of those numerous off-the-shelf shows where they come in and read from a script for an hour or two and bore the tears out of everybody, they often have some good information, but there's not much you can do about it, including disagree if you try to. So stick with the live stuff, which means us.
And give us a call.
Yes, and you can reach us anytime. Lines are open, 904-222-TALK. That's 222-8255. And as you regular listeners know, the callers always go directly to the head of the line. We will interrupt virtually anything to put a caller on. So if you hear anything that stimulates you or you have been thinking about anything, give us a call. And if you are afraid to call, because a lot of people either don't want to be recognized or they're just kind of uneasy about being on a live show, you can always email us at VanWeFinancial.com, info@VanWeFinancial.com. And sometime during the show, I'll have Adam spell that for you. It's not a hard name. It's an unusual name. There's a difference.
Yeah, it's not too bad once you get it down.
Right. So anyway, we are here. We are live. It is the 12th of January. It's chilly, but not terribly unpleasant out there. But what a good day to either be in your car going somewhere listening to the radio or sitting home listening on your computer or whatever. Always reach us on WBOB radio.
I was talking to a out-of-town guest of my neighbor's last night. He was asking what the weather was like in North Florida this time of year.
What
kind of laughed and said, well, it can be anywhere from 20 degrees to 85. That's pretty accurate, I think, from day to day.
We've had a good share of that range just in the past few days.
Yeah, no doubt.
The old expression about Florida, if you don't like the weather, wait 15 minutes. Oftentimes very true. Anyway, I mentioned that we were in a better mood than we might be because of the market this week. We actually kind of hit a home run this week.
There was one bad thing about this week.
It was too short, or it was 6 points short of extending the run?
There you go. Friday was
an exciting comeback.
It was. We were down 200 points at one point on Friday and ended up down, I think, 6 points. So
that was that was a bid to extend the winning days to six.
Yeah.
My trivia question is about the length of winning streaks and losing streaks today. I'll get to that right after the first break. The numbers are not huge. The market doesn't spend very much time going up 5 days in a row.
No, and it shouldn't. That wouldn't make any sense. If it was that underpriced and every day it was going up, it should move quicker to get to where it was going to go. So I would.
It's funny because the numbers I put together this morning might indicate that you're exactly right.
Well, that would be the theory behind the market anyway, so it would make sense.
Yep.
So yeah,
anyway, I've got a bunch of headlines and idiocy in people's forecasts too. It's just so funny to do what we do and listen and read to the 24/7, 365 talking heads make idiots of themselves.
Yeah, it is. There's way too much free airtime and print. Well, not print, but screen to fill with garbage.
The man who predicted the housing crash in 2008 and probably 18 other housing crashes too, but they don't talk about those. But we'll get into all that later.
Yep.
Let's just get into this part where it was just a real fun week.
The biggest drop we saw this week was 0.2% in the NASDAQ on Friday, and the Dow was off 2 basis points. So the S&P was off 1 basis point, so 0.01%. It just wasn't even it was a non-factor. It almost went positive for the day on Friday. That would have extended the winning streak, but all three indices ended up down on Friday just so slightly. But for the week, the Dow was up 2.4%, the S&P a little bit higher at 2.5%, and the NASDAQ the clear winner at 3.5%. So not a bad week overall. Could be a little bit of a Santa Claus rally that just started a little bit late this year.
Yeah, Santa Claus is maybe what was too cold for a couple of days or something.
There are a few reasons for the recent rally. One is a weakening dollar. There's the China trade talks, which are actually ongoing right now, and a dovish Fed. And then the sudden realization by a lot of people that the economy might still be good.
What a shock.
I know. The China trade talks, in my opinion, are just a matter of time before they get resolved. I've said this a bunch of times, but neither the U.S. or the Chinese can afford for these talks to break down. We should know something in at the very long end of the curve, I would say a couple of months, hopefully something a little bit sooner. And for the Fed, it appears that despite their dual mandate, which does not involve propping up the stock market, in fact, they have no mandate to even look at that, it seems that they took notice of the pretty sharp decline over the last 3 months and went from pretty hawkish to pretty dovish almost overnight.
Pretty hard not to take notice when you're being called out in the media, isn't it? By the president?
Well, I would hope that wasn't why they changed their tune.
No, but it's going to open their
eyes.
It's
not going to hurt.
Nobody wants to hear that kind of stuff about themselves.
Right. And the fact is the Fed does tend to move too far in both directions, up and down. When they're in a hiking cycle, they tend to go too far up. And when they're in a lowering cycle, they tend to go too far down. And I think that's been proven fairly well by economists over time. So,
yeah, you want to talk about who didn't predict the 2008 housing crash?
Yeah, exactly. The guy who was supposed to do that.
And that's exactly the right thing. You know the old expression, did Ben Bernanke ever get anything right? Let me think. No.
So the market's now pricing in about one rate hike in 2019 versus it was not that long ago. It was 3 to 4 hikes.
Even a week ago, I read that it was kind of hovering between 2 and 3, and that's coming down now. I think you're going to see a very benign period for interest rate movement.
Agreed.
There's going to be some things investors should do to take advantage of that, or can do anyway. We'll get into some of that too. I've got a lot of other things to talk about. We'll be a little more specific about what's been rallying in the market because some of it's sort of significant. So we'll take a short break and we'll be right back on the other side. Don't go anywhere. This is the Ben Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have a trivia question, as usual, this week brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. We mentioned in the early part of the show the Dow had just ended a 5-day winning streak and was only 6 points short of making it a sixth day. Now, how many days was the longest winning streak in the past year? We know the minimum has to be 5 because we just did that.
The past one, past 365 days, or
past. I'll take it even further, back to January of 2018.
Okay,
which makes it about 53 and a half weeks or something like that. And we did pick up 1,315 points on this 5-day run, and that was pretty good. We did have a close over 24 too for one moment.
Yeah, just barely.
Barely. But how many days was the longest winning streak? It's a whole number, and it's 5 or more. So this one ought to be pretty easy.
Yeah, not bad.
All right, so what else happened? I know earnings season has started unofficially, and I figured you might want to get into that.
You read my mind. Uh-huh. Earnings season really kicks off this week, and so there's a lot to look for in this earnings season. A couple of things that I'm going to be looking for is top-line growth. What is the revenue beat rate? The earnings beat rate has been strong throughout this recovery, more so lately, but even before the earnings were not the problem. Top-line sales growth was the problem. It got really good for a couple of quarters, and then it really fell off for the last two quarters. So I would like to see a little bit of an improvement in top-line growth this quarter. We also might see a little bit more volatility in the market than we saw this week. This week was pretty calm. It was great. I was very happy about that.
Nice.
but I'm expecting with the earnings season coming up, you're probably going to see a little bit more trading based on that news. And so I would not be surprised to see volatility inch up again. This week, we're going to see it's going to be very heavily focused on financials, Citigroup, JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and others. But in addition to those bank stocks, we're going to see Delta Airlines, Kinder Morgan, Netflix, and a bunch of others. So we'll see a sampling of other industries, but it's going to be it's a financial week. So something to keep an eye on as well. Are rising rates benefiting these banks?
You got any preview, or do you want to take a guess?
No, I will say that Citigroup was trading a good bit higher this week based on anticipation of their earnings report next week. So the market is, I guess, optimistic about some financials. We'll see.
We will.
Well, then again, the market moved up the last 3 weeks, so it could just be something to do with that.
Could be the rising tide.
Yeah. This week wasn't just kind to U.S. stocks. International stocks actually traded up as well for the first time in a while. Yeah. Canada, Mexico, Japan, Hong Kong, and Singapore all moved up to more than 4% up on the year. All of these markets are still a ways from their 52 weeks high, but it's nice to see a small rally in internationals. Last week, we saw a major drop off in the ISM manufacturing report for December. The non-manufacturing or services report had a drop off this week, but it wasn't nearly the same magnitude. The forecast was to drop to 58.5. The actual reading came at 57.2. It wasn't a win, but it wasn't a huge miss. Anything above 50 still signals expansion. You also have to remember that the services sector is much, much larger than manufacturing, so that is the really important number of the two. Excuse me.
And yet strange things are happening in manufacturing, too.
Yeah. Who knows? We'll see what it looks like. I don't like judging these reports off of 1 month. When you have a string of really good reports and then one bad one, it's very possible that the next month just bounces back. And
as I always remind people, anything that is against an estimate, it comes up and here's the estimate, here's the real reading. It's entirely dependent on what the estimate was and who made it as to what the results mean.
Yes.
Who are these guys that do these estimates?
But
I continually ask that.
It didn't just miss the estimate. It was much lower than the trend. So,
but you got to take all this stuff with something of a grain of salt.
So one area of the government that hasn't been shut down due to the overall government shutdown is the Bureau of...
Oh, is the government shutdown?
I didn't notice, but I heard about it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Bureau of Labor and Statistics, which releases the JOLTS, which is Job Openings and Labor Turnover Report. And it still shows a really healthy economy. Now, a bunch of the numbers are off their recent highs, but still really, really good.
Well, when your highs are about a million higher than the people looking for work, it's a good thing.
And the highs in many of these cases were all-time highs, like record number of job openings and things like that. So they're off of their recent highs. One really interesting trend is quit rates. That's one of my favorite numbers. I think that's a great measure of how well the economy is doing, because people don't quit jobs unless they feel secure that they can either go find another job or they already have another job lined up. So that's a number that's been creeping up. It's pulled back a little bit, except in one area that's seeing quit rates that are way above normal is public school teachers. So normally teachers don't leave their jobs very often because of the benefits. Some of them get pensions. And there's just a variety of reasons. People that go into teaching are usually very dedicated to their jobs, and we thank them for that. But recently they've been quitting. So there's been a bunch of things that have been happening. The strong labor market is one of them. The low pay, they've been getting benefits cuts, and teachers are now looking around. And I've seen a couple of articles recently in Duval-based newspapers that are saying that it's really a problem in Duval County. Hmm. And so they're looking around and leaving their profession and going to other jobs, which is unusual.
And
so
what will that result in?
My guess is that you're going to see teacher pay rise in the next few years. So that's something that teachers have waited a long time for, and my prediction is that it will finally come true.
Funny thing about economic things, isn't it? They're sort of self-correcting.
That's right. So good news for you teachers out there, and thank you for everything you do.
Yes, I agree 100%. So why is it that people are so dedicated to talking down the economy? Could it be politics?
That's one reason.
Could it be in order to get listened to?
Yeah, I mean, fear sells.
Maybe to, I don't know, maybe get one right, and 10 years from now you can say, oh, man, I called that.
That was the guy who predicted that event.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I thought I'd, you know, my propensity for headlines, I just love reading what other people say, and then you look around and see if any of these are true. I mentioned earlier the guy who predicted sort of the crash of 2008 with the housing. He is called the housing bear.
Okay.
Now, are you going to listen to some guy who's called the housing bear?
Well, considering that on average housing has risen with inflation every year since history, probably not a very accurate predictor.
Now, housing bears, that would be a zookeeper, maybe. But this guy's the housing bear. So he says the worst is yet to come. And I said, the worst? Worse than what? Yesterday? Day before? Has it slowed a little bit since the absolute peak, which was, what, 2017, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's down a little bit.
Sure.
It's down to high.
Yeah. And it's still going up. That's the thing. The growth has slowed, but it's still growing.
You know how they invented that term several years ago called a growth recession? That's so they could use the term recession.
Ridiculous.
It was amazing. All right, that was Monday. Then comes Tuesday. The stock market is flashing warning signs of a corporate profit collapse.
Uh-oh.
A corporate profit collapse.
Again, they're talking about growth. So
well, you wouldn't know that by reading that headline, would you?
You would know it if you follow anything in the stock market. That yes, we probably won't see 18% to 22% gains in profits this year.
Yeah, what happened last year that would cause that? Could it be, a dramatic tax rate cut?
Could have something to do with that.
So all of us who told you that the earnings are going to be great because the tax rate was cut, now the earnings are going to slow down because the tax rates are exactly the same as they were.
But that they're still going to retain that 22% increase year over year that they made last year.
You got to be clutching, people. This gets better and better. So on Wednesday, bank accounts to be crushed by this new hidden tax.
Uh-oh. I don't know what that could be.
Well, there isn't one.
Okay.
There's no hidden tax on bank accounts. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. What did they think? We're going to start getting our interest tax free, but it didn't happen. So that now there's a hidden tax called you got to pay taxes on your interest from the bank just like you always have for my entire lifetime. I don't know. All right. Then there was also on Wednesday, Alan Greenspan warns of this U.S. scheme to confiscate your savings. A scheme to confiscate your savings. No, he didn't. And no, he wouldn't. And then there was this little known but legal IRS tax law is going to require you to move your IRA or 401k to gold.
Oh, require you to.
Oh, yeah. You're going to have to do it. Oh, that is if you want to survive the coming bad years or whatever, I guess.
Okay.
Guess what? If you follow that story and look at the reply line on it, what do you suppose the name of this outfit is?
My guess would be Stansberry.
No. It's even better. Birch Gold.
Oh, of course.
They're selling gold, people. So they're going to tell you that you better get in there before your 401k just dissipates. Oh, and by the way, we'll sell it to you. Mm-hmm. Come on. All right, we'll be right back. This is the Vanley Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanley Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanley.
And I'm Adam Vanley.
And trivia question is still out there. We just finished a 5-day winning streak in the Dow. What has been the longest winning streak in the Dow over the last year? Okay, I want to do a couple more of these, and I have a point. I always have a point, but I want to get to it because people read this stuff, and I know because of the business that we're in that a lot of people read this stuff, and they read enough of it that they start to get worried, and they'll come and ask us, well, what do you think about this? And it makes it very difficult to maintain calm. Now, in all of this, I am not saying that this market is going through the roof and going to set a new high real soon or anything like that. I am telling you, I don't know. But I'm also telling you, we study economics, and things aren't that bad out here, folks, that would cause anything. But it's things like this that really bug me. This is from Thursday. Financial Insider, whatever the heck that is. I think I could be one of those, don't you?
You could be. You work inside.
Just call yourself that.
Well, you work inside the industry.
Sure. That an unstoppable economic collapse has been triggered. Subheadline, protect your family and finances by watching this special report.
Mm-hmm.
Selling newsletters, folks. That's what I always tell you. Born before 1965? Collect $480 to $549 a week with new retirement, quote, side job. And then it goes on to say you can actually collect up to $1,038 or more. So a couple quick questions here. If you can collect between $480 and $549, isn't that a lower range than $1,038 or more? So which part of this doesn't make sense aside from the obvious answer? All of it. Anybody can get a second job. Come on, people. Ray Dalio, somebody whose name you read once in a while, I had known nothing about him. He says, bear market like 1937 taking shape. That was the day, the exact day, the Dow closed above 24,000. Under that headline was another headline in the financial news, said more blowout earnings being reported. Okay. Friday, major reversal ahead for U.S. stocks. Reasoning that...
Let's get back to the...
Whoops.
Okay, we're back. Reasoning is that a yield curve inversion is, parentheses, or quotes, developing. So was the bear market developing in the S&P 500, but when it got down there, it reversed and shot up sharply. Approaching something does not trigger a reversal, and there's no reversal that is caused by the yield curve. Analysts, trade war, shutdown, push recession to 6-year high. Really?
Wait, recession risk, do you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Shutdown, push, resist, yeah. Really? In the article, pointed out that the consensus, ready for this? The consensus of people is dramatically improved, the ones that believe a recession's coming. It is now up to 25% from 20 last month.
Hmm.
Now, I would rewrite that to say 75% of people surveyed, economists, whatever you want to do not see a recession coming this year. And this ad says the markets will fall by 70% or more. Really? Do you all remember 2006, 2007, and 2008 when we were all hurling ourselves out of our first floor windows. The loss in the S&P 500 during that period, which is by far the worst I have ever seen in my life, and it is also by far worse than anything I ever anticipate seeing, whether I'm right or wrong, I don't know, that was 55%. Now, stocks are going to fall 70%, and this guy wants to be believed by people like you. Please avoid these things. It's very hard on your heart. Very simple. Now I'm going to read you the real story. And this describes the Trump economic policy by as great an example as I could ever find. A lot of you are familiar with Nucor. Nucor is a steel maker. They use continuous cast method. They kind of reinvented the entire steel industry back in the 70s and 80s and such when I was really involved in all this stuff. The biggest input to a Comcast steel operation is not iron ore. It is actually recycled steel. So they not only did the world a favor, but they also were able to geographically spread throughout the country, which means they didn't have to ship their product nearly as far as if they were located in Bethlehem, Pittsburgh, and Gary and all that. So they really made a dramatic difference in the industry and in all the industries that depend on them. And for that, they've been fabulously successful. Well, they said on Monday they would spend $1.35 billion to build a plate mill, a steel plate mill in the U.S. Midwest. It's going to be in Missouri as things stand right now. Taking advantage of, ready for this, federal tax cuts that have resulted in windfall gains for several companies. What do you know? They're not taking the money and putting it in the CEO's bank account. They're putting it in Missouri in a new plate mill for $1.35 billion. It'll employ 400 people. Wow. It is also, Nucor is also, benefiting from higher steel prices for domestic producers due to tariffs imposed on imports by the Trump administration last year. I know tariffs are probably the most argumentative point in all of economics. They are there for only one reason, and that is to make a short-term fix in the way the market works, and then you got to get rid of them. That's exactly what we're attempting to do, and I have no reason to believe that it won't work. This mill should be, this is the third important point, should be fully operational in 2022. Well, this is 2019. That's 3 years from now. Now, what are you going to do if you're a CEO that's expecting a recession to come? Are you going to invest $1.35 billion in a three-year project? I'm not. Good morning, Marshall.
Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
Just a quick aside with what you were just talking about.
Huh?
The guy going to Missouri, building a plant.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the tax and jobs bill was something that said, let's identify these rural and urban impoverished areas.
Mm-hmm.
And let's incentivize people to go into those areas and make their investments such that this company takes all this capital gain they've made on something and they go and invest it and they defer their capital gains. And if they leave it there long enough, they eliminate the tax on that capital gain.
Well, isn't that nice?
So,
I like it.
So then you have this big company that needs a location. And I'll just give you an example. Let's say you've got Columbia County out there, Lake City, which is a modest but somewhat impoverished area. But gosh, they got good locations near
transportation hub.
I-10 and 75.
Yep, intersection of big and bigger.
Somebody goes and invests $1 billion there. You think that's going to create a bunch of jobs in Lake City?
But isn't that near one of the Amazon places? Or were they south of there?
I don't think there's an Amazon place out there.
Amazon probably did, but I think you have to be inside the Beltway for that particular area.
Okay.
But I'm sure they took advantage of a number of things. Mm-hmm. Yet at the same time, this gives that opportunity for that big company, and boy, does that make a splash.
Yeah.
Now, how about this? Think of Quicken Loans invested $1 billion in downtown Cleveland and $1 billion in downtown Detroit. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Do you think their complexes that they built and the creation of all those restaurants and various things to serve those people or the periphery of them had an economic impact on downtown Detroit and Cleveland?
I've seen the pictures. It's incredible. And because they are refurbishing their headquarters buildings there, the buildings around them are being refurbished by the employees. And downtown Detroit, yeah. Detroit, if you go into that section, I know you can get pretty badly lost in Detroit if you're not careful, but it's really coming back, and it's absolutely stunning, the architecture and so on. It's a beautiful thing to see.
I just wanted to add that one piece.
Well, I love it, Marshall. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. Yeah, the guy from Quicken Loans has really stuck his neck out, and I would say he's getting very amply rewarded for doing so. Gee, what do you know? Capitalism works, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Nucor Steel, $1.35 billion in a little rural area, and all they had to come up with was transportation hubs and 400 unemployed people. The lowest wages, I will bet you, that come out of there will be above $65,000 for the absolute lowest employee there. And Nucor is very generous with its employees. So this is really good news for Missouri in general. I'm glad they elected a bunch of nice people. We'll be right back. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And we still have the trivia questions sitting open. We had a five-day winning streak come to an end this week in the Dow. What was the longest one in the past year, which goes all the way back to January 1st of 2017? More than five. See, I even took one guess away. So, and it could have been a trick question. That could have been the longest one. But it was not. It was, however, tied for second. All right. Do you want to update us something?
I did.
Volatility, Adams Volatility Index, I'm going to call it.
Yeah, this is not a real index, but it's something that I
found
interesting.
It will be when you get better known.
That could be. You never
publish
know.
Publish something.
Exactly. So a few weeks ago, I talked about how many times the Dow crossed a 1,000-point threshold in 2018 versus 2017, but that was in early December, and since then, there was a lot more.
When the year was kind of over.
Yeah, but it wasn't over, was it?
No, so, Fat Lady hadn't sung.
No, not at all. So I went back and updated that, and I wanted to talk about it. In 2017, if you guys remember, it was 15 times that the Dow crossed a 1,000-point threshold. And so that number grew quite a bit in 2018. 2017, if you remember, was very, very not – it was not volatile at all. In 2018, that all changed, and we saw a lot of volatility. So in 2018, the final number was 43 times the Dow crossed a 1,000-point barrier, which is crazy to me. We have to make that a true indicator, we would have to somehow adjust for the size of it, because a 1,000-point move at 26,000 is much bigger than a 1,000-point move at 18,000. So yeah, I'll have to figure that one out. Yeah. But yeah.
But when you're ready to publish your Adams Volatility Index, you can factor that.
And we've already had a few this year too. So we had one this week, two. Actually, because it went over and came back.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting to see how that compares this year.
Don't get into intraday stuff either.
No, that's
man,
too much.
We've had a lot of that just on closings. All right. Well, how much do you really know about Social Security? I know a lot of people are getting older these days. I can prove it just by pulling out my birth certificate. But Social Security, for way too many people, is probably the most important form of retirement income. I wish it weren't so, but it is so. And even for those of us who have other forms of retirement income, it's still an important part of life. And it's not as simple as work your whole life, turn 65, file for benefits, collect benefits for the rest of your life, and go away. That's the superficial story of Social Security. There's a lot more to learn and a lot of options. And your job as your own best friend should be to figure out how to maximize what you get out of Social Security during the last phase of your life when you're collecting. That can only be done with good planning going into it. So first off, this will probably take me 2 or 3 weeks, but I want to go through some of the background and so on, and then I want to give you some of the options. And hopefully over a couple of weeks will give you a basis on which to start understanding what you can do and how you can start studying for it and who to believe and who to not necessarily believe. So let's go back a little bit. Through the earliest years, it was not available to us, and it was actually a result of the Great Depression that this got talked about, or at least it was that result that got it done. You know, people have to have some kind of a great motivator, I guess, to have a major change that affects society so much. But when they put it in, it seemed like a simple thing, and we found out right away that it was probably not that much of a simple thing. Now, there are a lot of stories about it, but my favorite one is very simple. It was the first Social Security recipient, and her name was Ida Mae Fuller. She was from Texas. She had been almost 65 when the system was put into place, and she actually became the very first benefit collector of the Social Security system. Her first check number was 00-0000-001. I hope her relatives kept it and framed it.
That would be great.
That is a claim to fame. The amount was $22.54, and it was issued on January 31, 1940. By the end of her life, she lived till 1975, at which time she was 100 years old. Her total payments received were $22,888.92. Her input, $24.75.
It's a good investment.
I didn't even bother to figure out the rate of return because my calculator kept blowing up. It was so big. It was really cool. Anyway, it was the brainstorm of the Roosevelt administration. I won't even bother to tell you which Roosevelt that was. The term itself, Social Security, refers to any system which helps the poor, and it started actually in Europe with their trade guilds, which we would call unions. The first widespread system in the U.S. was the Civil War Veterans Pensions. That plan got so big that in 1894, it amounted to more than one-third of the total federal government spending.
Hmm.
A lot of people survived the Civil War, apparently. A lot of them didn't, too. It was the Great Depression that stimulated the idea to take it national. And eventually in 1935, it became law. So it was implemented with a set of rules that were pretty simple, and it has, of course, grown. Things seem to be able to grow well when they're in a government environment. Must be a lot of food, water, and sunshine, huh? The system promised every beneficiary that the benefits would be tax-free forever. Wouldn't that be nice?
Mm-hmm.
And then some other stuff happened, and it became 50% taxable to a lot of people. And that was based on the simple concept that the employer had deducted his half, but you hadn't. So you were only going to have to pay taxes on what part the employer put in. Well, then some other stuff happened in the Clinton administration, and they needed revenue, as presidents are wont to do, especially those on that side of things. And so for a lot of people, it had become 85% taxable. Well, my first comment on any of this stuff was that I do not believe it will be very long before it is 100% taxable to every single recipient.
No doubt in my mind.
There is a large bundle of tax-free income out there in the hands of the Americans. And if there's one thing this government cannot tolerate, it's tax-free income in the hands of the citizenry. I feel the same way about Roth IRA income. Even though you were taxed on what went in, you've never been taxed on the growth. I still think there's going to be a way down the line where they're going to do that. Hopefully, the public outcry on both of these things will keep it from happening. But Clinton got away with that move, and there is no reason on God's green earth that that ever should have gotten through. Well, things like cancer and government seem to grow things and get them bigger and more complex. And now, of course, it covers more things, disability and other non-retirement supplements. And, unfortunately, it's going broke. The system itself, a lot of people get very surprised when I tell them this. The system itself is one of the most brilliant designs I have ever seen. And over the 18 years or so in this business, I have learned a lot about it. And every time I learn more about it, I appreciate more and more the design of the system.
But it was
one major flaw.
It was designed when people's life expectancy was 65.
And when every generation was larger than the one that was coming after it.
Yeah.
It is essentially, it has become essentially a Ponzi scheme.
I mean, it's hard to argue that without, it isn't, but it does appear that way.
Yeah, and what's going to happen now? A few years ago, it started, it's always been a pay-as-you-go system ever since they started using the money that was supposed to be in a trust fund or a lockbox, thanks, Al. This has never really happened since. But there was a file cabinet in West Virginia that had all the IOUs in it for what the government had borrowed. The IOUs said, we promise to pay you back. Well, they are now, instead of being added, they're being subtracted. It's going to go down to zero, and I'll tell you next week what's going to happen then. I've got a lot of ideas for fixing it, but that's really not my issue. My issue is how can you do the best job for yourselves improving your own finances by knowing what to do in Social Security. And we will do that next week. We did have a run of 8 consecutive days in 2017 when the Dow was up. But in those 8 days, it gained 974. And in our 5 days, it gained 1315. That means that this was a steep comeback, much more so than the routine volatility in the market. What it portends? Not exactly sure. We'll talk about that next week. Thanks for listening. This is the Banley Financial Hour.